What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation News Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. He's joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. I just watched the movie Virtuosity for some reason.
How was it?
It's very bad, but that was the point.
Yeah. So, yeah. We are almost done with this. All these hobbies that we planned on doing all year, that we saved off for the summer, that we pretended like we really wanted to do. Like, that's done. Like, we can stop pretending now. Like, you can stop pretending that you're going to read more. I can stop pretending that I'm going to watch more movies. All that stuff is over. We can start focusing on the NBA. Preseason has started for most NBA teams. The Rockets tip off preseason tomorrow. This is going to be our season preview edition of the Red Nation Hoops podcast. I'm pretty excited. But before we get into all that, let's get into some news items. So, Mark Berman over the week reported that the Rockets are making a strong effort to land Jimmy Butler in a trade with Minnesota. So this pretty much confirms what we've been thinking about the Rockets' pursuit of Butler for weeks now, right? And
Yeah. And
I'm just surprised that it's actually gotten down to the final stages, that like the Rockets seem to be one of the final two teams in this pursuit. Like, it legitimately seems to be Miami or Houston at this point. I don't see a third team creeping in there right now. I mean, maybe the Clippers or the Nets could make a late push, but I mean, it just seems like those teams are banking on free agency, and if they don't land Jimmy Butler, they're perfectly fine moving forward. So, I mean, I'm pretty intrigued. Like, I'm not sure necessarily what kind of offers are being thrown out there, but the one that's been speculated is Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, and a first round pick. Whether that's a lightly protected first round pick or an unprotected first round pick, you know, nobody knows. But that's what's been speculated by Zach Lowe, by this podcast, by many others. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense for that kind of offer to be made for Jimmy Butler. And there's been some conflicting opinions on this, and I've just been surprised. Like, frankly, it seems that Rockets Twitter is like split 50-50 on whether or not they should trade PJ Tucker. And I'm just of the opinion that of course you trade PJ Tucker. It's Jimmy freaking Butler. Like, yes, that is a lot to give up for a player, but that is a star player, and star commodities are of the highest degree of importance in the NBA. It's more than any other league, probably. Like, it's probably as important as the starting quarterback in football. Like, other than that, there's no other league that places this much importance on star power. And when you're competing with one team and one team only, like, I don't understand why there's all this haggling over PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker is a piece that you can replace easier than landing a piece like Jimmy Butler. I just don't understand why this isn't a no-brainer to more people.
Well, all right. Let me get into it. I'm gonna play a little bit of apologist here. I agree that like you have to get a star whenever you can, but I get it, right? So first off, there's this ongoing narrative around the team that they lost wing defenders, which they did. They did lose two wing defenders in Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbamute.
Yes.
But the overall take seems to be that is what they need. They don't have enough wing defenders. Their chances against the Warriors have fallen off precipitously because they don't have enough wing defenders. They don't have enough depth, which honestly I think they have more depth than last year currently, but that's neither here nor there. So if they don't have enough wing defenders, they're in trouble, right? And by losing a wing defender in PJ Tucker, that just exacerbates the problem, I think, is the mentality. Of course, Jimmy Butler is an exceptional defender and plays on the wing. But Eric Gordon is also a capable defender, and he plays a two typically. So you are sort of losing wing defense minutes, and more importantly, losing a number of wing defenders you can play at the same time. I think that like the current narrative of why the Rockets got worse fits in with the narrative of, well, if they lost another one of these guys, they lost two out of three of those guys. If they lose all three, then they're really in trouble. Also, people overvalue like current teams over potential teams. We're so worried about that's the other thing. Everyone's concerned about the Rockets' chemistry. Without this communication and chemistry, how will they play together? Their chemistry's in trouble. Well, if there's one thing that Jimmy Butler is known for, it is chemistry problems, along with Carmelo Anthony as well. So I think that it plays right into everybody's fears. Everybody likes to, Rockets fans like to slam the national media, but for all the slamming of the media they do, they very clearly have like internalized a lot of these complaints that the media has handed on them. And you know, these are not invalid complaints as well. They are real concerns that they don't have enough wing defense and they don't have enough continuity. But So I think they're just kind of worried about that. People are overvaluing the guys they have. I mean, obviously you want to keep PJ Tucker. If you could somehow keep PJ Tucker and have Jimmy Butler, that would be an incredible coup. And moreover, I think that you feel like you have to have that to compete with the Warriors, who are – it's impossible to like overestimate the Warriors at this point, and everyone's trying to overestimate the Warriors at this point. So, but it's weird to think about if you told somebody – a few years, like let's say you told somebody in like 2015 or something that the Rockets could potentially have a lineup of Chris Paul, James Harden, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella of this capacity, and somebody else, and that they would still not be the favorites for a championship. That's just ludicrous.
Yeah. I mean, they're a ridiculously stacked team. But they have to face a more stacked team. And to do that, as I said, I think they need more star power. I think they're in pretty good a position to compete with the Warriors right now. I mean, they've obviously proved that last year that, you know, Chris Paul and James Harden can be enough. They can be enough with some, you know, lucky bounces that go your way, with some injury luck, with some really good defense, with really good coaching. That can be enough. That can be a good enough formula to beat the Warriors. But, I mean, if you're trying to improve your chances on the margins, I mean, there's few better players that I think would fit this current team than Jimmy Butler. I mean, if you're talking about wing defense being a problem for the Rockets, I mean, isn't that what Jimmy Butler is? Jimmy Butler is an all NBA level wing defender. Like, yes, you lose PJ Tucker, and yes, that does hurt your versatility a little bit, but you can find a piece like that. You know, maybe not as good as PJ Tucker, but on the buyout market, you could find 70% of PJ Tucker. On the buyout market, you can't find 70% of Jimmy Butler. That's just not happening. In any way, shape, or form, that's not going to happen. No one of Jimmy Butler's caliber is going to become available that easily to you. So I do think you raised two fair concerns. One being that the proximity to training camp. I mean, training camp is underway, and Rockets preseason is tomorrow, so making a trade this late does affect chemistry, and I do think that is something that the Rockets should take into account when making a major trade like this. Like that, like if it was before training camp, I would be all over it. Like it's, but the fact that we're this late in the process and Minnesota is being Minnesota. They're haggling over things that they're not gonna get. They're not getting Ben Simmons in a trade. They're not getting elite prospects back for Jimmy Butler, especially considering that Jimmy Butler essentially told them that he's going to leave in a year, and that he's coming off of this hand injury. Like it's, his value is at a low point, which is why I think the Rockets are in position to pounce. But it's another reason why Minnesota is really, really being ridiculous here in terms of what they're asking for. But yeah, proximity to training camp is a concern. And another concern I think is probably more legitimate than, you know, losing PJ Tucker. Losing Eric Gordon, who is a really, really, really freaking good basketball player. And harder to replace than PJ Tucker. Like, I think that's what, if you were to say, I don't want to do this trade, PJ Tucker shouldn't be the breaking point. The breaking point should be Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon's been really good for the Rockets for the past 2 years now, and he's been really healthy, and that's something that Jimmy Butler cannot say for himself. And that's the piece I'd be afraid to lose, not PJ Tucker. I just...
Yeah. Yeah, but I think everyone's accepted that Eric Gordon has to go in the trade because you can't not trade him, right? He's the one that they want, so he's automatically gone. So he's the one who's being replaced by Eric Gordon, and that's the thing. People don't want to lose the other part of it, the bonus as well, right? Because if they've already resigned themselves to losing Eric Gordon, who's the closest to Jimmy Butler in terms of play and value,
right? So. I mean, like, here's the thing, guys. You have to give up good stuff to get good players. Like, this is just a thing. Like, you can't give up nothing to get, like you can't haggle over pieces like this. Like, to get another star player, the Rockets are gonna have to give up something of significance. Like, that's just the case. Like, you're not gonna get another star player by holding on to all your entire war chest. You have to give up valuable commodities. And I realize PJ Tucker is a glue guy. I realize PJ Tucker is a really great locker room leader. And I realize that defensively, the Rockets are in a really precarious position when going up against the Warriors when they don't have PJ Tucker. But that's someone that is more, as I said before, that's someone that's more replaceable. But at this point, we're just going in circles. Bottom line, That's the update on Jimmy Butler as of this moment. If I were to bet, I don't think that the Rockets are going to get a deal done for Jimmy Butler within the next week at all. Like
I don't think anybody does. I kind of think that he might just end up like languishing in Minnesota for a while because that organization is a horrible pile of chaos and discoordination.
Right, right. This whole thing about Glenn Taylor directly conflicting with what Tom Thibodeau, the president of basketball operations, and their general manager Scott Layden is saying, like I've never seen anything like it. Like it's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, if at this point, like I don't see Tom Thibodeau making it past next summer. Like Tom Thibodeau at this point is probably going to be I don't know. It could be just that Tom Thibodeau becomes just a head coach. I don't think he's keeping his president of basketball operations title for much longer. Like, that's going to go pretty soon. Whether or not he loses his job entirely, God knows. But I think it's going to be a real tough sell on ownership for him to keep that job title. And we're probably never going to see this ever again. Coach and GM at the same time, like, that's never going to happen again. Nobody's going to get those two job titles.
They shouldn't ever get it again.
Yeah, Minnesota's a bloodbath. Bottom line, we're gonna do this preview assuming that the Rockets don't trade for Jimmy Butler. We're gonna assume this roster is the roster, and I'm gonna be posting my Rockets season preview on SportsMap tomorrow morning. So that preview is going to assume the same thing, that the Rockets are not making any significant moves before the season. And yeah, so media day was on Monday. The Rockets said pretty much the same stuff they've been saying since last summer. They're really intent on trying to win a championship, and they really want to compete with Golden State Warriors. Yeah. Like that's always the theme of media day, it seems nowadays. But there were some interesting stuff that was said that was taken away from media day. What were your biggest takeaways from media day?
Man, all right. First off, let me say it's media day. I'm generally out on media days in general. You don't ever hear anything. My biggest actual takeaway from media day, such as it was, is that the Rockets pay attention to what the media is saying about them and are tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is just a thing. I mean, I remember an interview where Daryl was and James Harden were being interviewed by Matt Thomas, and James Harden says, like, yeah, I don't really pay attention to all that, but Daryl sends me everything. Daryl literally looks up this stuff on Twitter and sends it to James Harden. Like, look what they're saying about you. Look what they're saying about us.
It's like, amazing.
Yeah, it's a smart tactic, frankly. I mean, like, that's a great way to motivate people by showing them who's doubting you. I think it's generally a great way to go about it and a fun way to go about it. My biggest takeaway from media day is the Rockets are clearly aware of the luxury tax. Like that's something that Tillman Fertitta tried to brush off during the offseason, talking about how we don't even bring up the luxury tax, which was a ridiculous statement when it was said at the time, and no one believed him, and he pretty much contradicted himself right away at the start of media day by saying that, yeah, that's obviously a huge deterrent, the luxury tax, and the Rockets pay attention to all that, and how you can pay $5 million for a player and end up paying $20 million total because of luxury tax. So the Rockets are obviously aware of that. Fertitta made some comments about how the Rockets want to avoid the repeater tax, which is going to be a real juggling act. I don't know how the Rockets are going to manage to do that in the coming years. Like it's especially if they plan on contending for a while. Like it's gonna be really difficult to get out of that repeater tax. So that was interesting to me. Another takeaway to me was Carmelo seems to be open to a bench role, and this was something
he'd better be.
Yeah, and this was something that a lot of us doubted whether or not he'd ever be able to accept that bench role. And it seems that, you know, on media day he never overtly said, "Yeah, I'm coming off the bench." But he said that he's willing to do whatever it takes to help the Rockets win, and that presumably means coming off the bench if asked to. And I think this was a real positive takeaway. Like, this was a real, like, this makes the signing look a lot better, because at the time, what was assumed when the Rockets signed Carmelo Anthony was he's getting the taxpayer mid-level exception, and he's going to start. Which both of those things were real. Like that, both of those things rubbed me the wrong way. Like, it really turned me off at the signing. If he was going to start, and if he was going to get that tax member level exception, I was really anti Carmelo Anthony. But it's, you know, he obviously took the minimum, and it seems he's going to come off the bench. Like, I mean, no, there hasn't been any indication as to Carmelo Anthony starting at all coming out of training camp or media day. Like, it really does seem like he's coming off the bench. Even though the Rockets haven't said it, it would be a real shocker at this point if he starts. Now, he's going to start tomorrow because PJ Tucker has a back issue. So he's going to start tomorrow. But other than that, it's presumed PJ Tucker will be the starting day power forward. And Mike D'Antoni said at media day that he views Carmelo Anthony as a power forward. So obviously, he's not going to start. Like that, it just seems pretty clear that the Rockets are going to come off the bench. Those are my two biggest takeaways. Did you have anything different than that, or do you have anything to add on those two things?
He better come off the bench. I think he is going to. He seems to realize that it's coming down the pike on him, and he's not really fighting back on it as hard as he was because he doesn't have much of a choice. I mean, what's he going to do? Complain to Chris Paul, right? Like, that's just the best situation for him. So if he comes off the bench, that does make it look better. I am still reluctant to partake of the Carmelo Anthony Kool-Aid until I see some play from him to back it up. But he can do less damage to the team off the bench than as a starter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Anything else stick out to you from me today, or was it just those two things?
Gerald Green as James Harden's enforcer is pretty hilarious, and I'm into it.
Yeah, Gerald Green was, I mean, in terms of all-time favorite Rockets ranking, Gerald Green's making a real push in a short amount of time that I didn't see coming. Like, he's really warmed himself up to the fan base faster than any player I've ever seen. Like, it's just, he embraces the team, he embraces the city, like, I tweeted about this on Media Day. It really seems like Gerald Green is just like a diehard Houston sports fan that happens to be able to play basketball.
Like, just, he's like the most Houston dude in the world. It's excellent.
Yeah. He's really become a fan favorite. He's really pleasant to interview too. Like it's, I mean, in terms of candidness, I mean, he's right up there in terms of Rockets rankings. He says whatever's on his mind, and most of the time those are good things. And he's generally been a great locker room guy for the Rockets. Yeah, I'm big fan of Gerald Green. And I'm happy that he's had this career, I guess, I don't want to say revival, but I mean, he's generally viewed as a positive basketball player now, which I don't think was the case last year, right? He's He's flipped his reputation completely. He was out of the league. He got cut by many teams, and it seemed like he was down and out. And now he's a positive, not only basketball player, but a positive locker room player. So it's great. It's great. Tim McMahon of ESPN reported that, and I quote, "Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni is leaning strongly towards using Eric Gordon as a starter and Carmelo Anthony as a sixth man. D'Antoni would also like to pair Anthony with James Ennis, a strong defender, as much as possible." So he reported this, but in training camp, it appears that James Ennis is soaking up all of the starting minutes. Like, in terms of playing with groups, James Ennis seems to be with the starters all the time. And everybody's taking notice of this. It doesn't seem to be clear what kind of starting unit the Rockets are going to go with. So first I'll ask, what do you think about the idea of Eric Gordon starting? What do you think of that possibility?
Well, first off, I'd like to put out that I drafted Eric Gordon in fantasy in the 120s. So if you were to start, that would make that great value for me. I think it's a good idea. He's excellent. He's better than six men typically be. That's why he won six man of the year. So he should definitely be starting if it's reasonable for him to start. He's a pretty good defender. I think he'll help out the starting lineup, and he's better than Carmelo Anthony. And I think you know what you're getting from him a lot more than with James Ennis. So I think it's a good idea. It totally made sense when I saw it. It made me a little more confident in their ability this season.
Oh, okay. So, like, this to me was a... It was a bold choice to me. Like, honestly, it wasn't a no-brainer to me. It felt like something totally Mike D'Antoni would do, right? Starting a three-guard unit is 100% out of Mike D'Antoni's playbook. And it's unique. It's different. It's I'm not really sure how the Rockets are gonna look defensively to start games if you're gonna start Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon's proven to be a pretty good defender in Houston, but in terms of height, like, he's 6'5". I know he has a 6'9" wingspan, but I mean, in order to defend guys like Kevin Durant or Paul George or, you know, like the real elite wings in the league, you need to be at least 6'8". 6'9", and have like a 6'10" wingspan. And, you know, starting Eric Gordon is, you know, I know it doesn't really matter who starts. It really matters who finishes and what lineups the Rockets use throughout the course of the game. So starting really isn't that important anymore, especially in today's NBA. Like, it's at this point, it's just a job title. It doesn't really matter. But it's a bold choice. I'm interested to see how it works. I personally prefer the look of James Ennis in the starting unit. I think he's a really good defender, and I really like him in the starting small forward spot.
Yeah, I've actually seen some people push back on the idea that Ennis is a good defender, but it seems like it relies a lot on like weird advanced metrics that I don't know how much I believe in. I think it's fine. I think that it's not a problem given that James Harden can defend fours sometimes. Like, he might even defend fours in that lineup and hide him there, or he can will tend to defend them more on ball and hide a little bit more of his weaknesses. Harden is kind of big and tall for a shooting guard, and you can just effectively, defensively, have Eric Gordon at the two. Because you don't have to play the same position on defense and offense. Which is a very that's a very Mike D'Antoni thing as well, to, you know, switch it up, play weird lineups. I don't think it's a particularly weird choice. I think it's a good. I think until Ennis proves that he should be starting, he will probably see Eric Gordon starting, and maybe Ennis will prove it. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen this season with him. Hopefully, it'll go great. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm so used to Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets just doing things that make sense internally and not like, as far as what makes sense in the larger orthodoxy or, like, I guess metagame, you might say, of the league, that it doesn't strike me as strange at all. It's like, oh yeah, he's better than the other than Carmelo Anthony. Of course, he should start over him.
Yeah, it's more starting over James Ennis. But I mean, if you were to talk about purely the Rockets' five best players, I mean, this lineup gives the Rockets the possibility to start those guys, right? Like James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, and Clint Capela. Those are the five best Rockets, right? And if that was your idea going into the starting lineup, It makes perfect sense. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just interested. You know, I don't think it's a home run. I don't think it's a bad move. I think it's bold. I think it's definitely bold. It's different. It's creative, and I want to see how it works out. If that is indeed the starting lineup that the Rockets should go with. The Rockets have not unveiled their starting unit, and for the first time in a couple of years now, this is a real mystery. Like, this is the first time in a few years we don't know the Rockets starting unit going into it, and that's intriguing. I think the Rockets, and they haven't said this out loud, I looking at their roster, I have a feeling that, and this is like nobody cares about this. What I'm about to say, nobody cares about this. I have a feeling they're going to play Gerald Green at the three. I think he's going to play more small forward this year, and I think, you know, the Rockets are going to scale down their guard units. Like, they have Michael Carter Williams, they have Brandon Knight whenever he comes back, and they have Eric Gordon. All three of those guys are guards. I think one of those guys is going to scale down. I think the guy is going to be Gerald Green, and I'm not sure how he's going to fare defensively. He's proven that he can be a not a hurt to you defensively if he wants to be. So
yeah, he can be like mediocre to passable.
Right. So I have a feeling they're gonna play him at backup three until they sign someone off the scrap heap, which I fully see them signing someone on the buyout market and see them being a huge player in that market. Or, you know, I could also see them making a trade at the trade deadline since they have all their first round picks moving forward. This is something I'm watching for. It's just something I'm watching for. I think they're going to scale down a fair bit. And traditionally, Gerald Green's played a lot of two, and he's played a lot of one with Mike D'Antoni. But I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play small forward this year, and I think he's going to scale down. I think they're going to ask more of him defensively. Because of, you know, the lack of wing depth. He's tall enough. If you look up Gerald Green's height, I mean, it would surprise. He's 6'7", 6'8", and he has like a 6'10" wingspan. Like, he's like, in terms of, if you were to look at his height and look at his wingspan, the first position you would scale him at was a small forward position, but he's traditionally played shooting guard. So that's just something I'm looking forward to. So preseason starts tomorrow for the Rockets. Are you excited? Is there anything you're looking forward to?
Seeing the Rockets play basketball. No, but I want to see how Carmelo Anthony does. I want to see how James Ennis does. I am excited to see them actually get out there and do something, so we'll have some gristle for the grinder, as it were. Everyone's got so many thoughts about, you know, how the team's going to do and was it better or worse, etc., that actually having something to confirm or deny will be nice.
Yeah, I'm excited to see these new guys in big roles. Like James Ennis, Michael Carter Williams, Marquise Chris, right now, what's it called? PJ Tucker is hurt, so I'd like to see how Carmelo fares next to Chris Paul and James Harden. If that actually makes him better, if he actually changes his shot quality, like, and stops taking those terrible long twos, or is more efficient at those long twos next to Chris Paul and James Harden, we'll see. I'm definitely interested to see how Melo fares, and I want to see their rotation, because again, we just talked about it. The rotation has a lot of question marks in terms of who's playing what, when, what lineups the Rockets like, all those things. And yeah, I'm just excited for basketball to start again. And the Rockets are presumably going to take this seriously. Their starters are going to play 20 to 30 minutes each, which is, in terms of preseason basketball, that's unique. Most teams don't do that. Most teams pretty much cap off at 20 minutes apiece for their starters. But the Rockets traditionally take preseason very seriously. It's not a new thing. They did this last year, and they did it the year before. Like Mike D'Antoni is a rhythmic coach, and he believes the rhythm of the preseason carries over to the regular season, and it's proven itself to be correct both of the times. I mean, if you look at statistically, like, their offensive and defensive statistics have carried over pretty well from preseason to regular season, and Their preseason, more so than others, is actually, you can actually take away some stuff from their preseason regular season. Like, it's not nothing. Like, Mike D'Antoni called it a dress rehearsal, today in practice scrums. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how they handle it.
Yeah, as you said, they usually do take it a bit more seriously than a lot of teams do. And more importantly, they tend to play pretty similarly in preseason to how they actually play in the regular season. So, yeah, you can take some things away from it. All right, so on a related larger note, it's kind of funny how you can't take much away from preseason, but then you also can't take away much from the regular season going into the playoffs. And then even during the playoffs, you know, depending on what team is playing, I am the Warriors, you can't take much seriously there, too. It's kind of weird how when you ask people, eventually becomes, well, you can't believe anything you see when it comes to basketball. Okay. I mean, all of it matters a little bit. Like, nothing is meaningless. Who a team is in the preseason and regular season, it all matters somewhat. You just have to know, be willing to understand how much it actually tells you and how much it doesn't tell you. It's not nothing. It's never nothing.
Well, it's nothing if you're playing the Shanghai Sharks, right?
Yeah. Well, but you can see what their rotation might be. There's something in there. There's always something you can see and, like, tell how they're going to play. Oh, you can see what this guy's shot looks like or something, right? There's always something you can pull away from any given game, even if it's not particularly meaningful.
No, you're right. You're right. You're 100% right. Like, there's always something you can pull from a basketball game. I'm a believer in that, too. So let's not bury the lead here. How many wins are the Rockets going to win, and how many, and what seed does that get them? I'm going to start first. I'll say that I think they're going to win 58 games, and I think they're going to be this 2 seed this year. And I realize that's a drop off from last year. I do think they're going to be, they're going to take a small step back defensively to start the season. And I think offensively, they're still going to be elite, but it's possible they're not as elite as they were last year. I mean, they were an all-time offense last year, so it's possible. I mean, it's very likely that they're not going to be as good as they were last year. I mean, they were a historically great team last year. So being less than that is not it's not an insult. It's just reality. Teams don't typically win 60 plus games back-to-back season. So I don't think they're going to win 60 games this year. It's possible they do, but I'm going to be safe here, and I'm going to say 58 wins.
As I said elsewhere, I'm going to say it here too. I'm going to put them at about 60 wins and also a second seed. I'm only taking them to fall 5 games between last season and this season. So
yeah,
it's pretty wild that, like, the Rockets are 5 games worse is an extremely positive take, I guess, but they were excellent. A couple things go their way and they win, like, even more than 65 games. I don't know. They're clearly better than everybody else in the West except for the Warriors, and they're probably going to be better than the Warriors in the regular season, because I don't think the Warriors are going to care even a little bit to even try. So I think they still have the potential. Like, conservatively, I'm going to say they're a second seed, but there's a very good chance of the first seed. If the Warriors make it in the playoffs, then they're the favorites to win the championship. They can get in as the eighth seed and still be the favorites, so why would they care?
A lot of their seeding really matters on whether or not the Warriors really care, right? Like, it's that's a lot of the thinking going into this prediction, whether or not the Warriors are going to give their full effort this season. And if they do, the Rockets are in for a dogfight in terms of seeding battle. I think they really do want home court advantage again in the conference finals if they do get there. I do think that is a goal for them again this season. They've said that, and I think it matters. Like, you don't want to play a game 7 at Oracle Arena if you can avoid it. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know Toyota Center doesn't have the greatest home court advantage, but in terms of not being at Oracle Arena, you take that any day of the week.
That's a big advantage.
Right.
Yeah, and I really don't think the Warriors are going to care. They were completely unimpressed by what happened to them last season. I would not be surprised if they just, like, are resting half of their players every game. This may be a bit of hyperbole, but they're going to take the foot off the gas. I think a lot of the question, though, is where you think the Rockets stack up next to the other teams in the West. And, you know, the other top teams in the West, I think, are most likely the Jazz and the Thunder, I guess. That's sort of the easy picks for who are the next two teams up in the West behind the Rockets and or ahead of the Rockets, maybe. Ooh. And a lot of people are, like, taking the Jazz and or Thunder to be better than Houston this season.
I love it. Again, every year. I can't wait for the backpedaling to start tomorrow. It happens after every preseason. Be going into every preseason, the Thunder are going to be red in the Rockets. The Thunder are going to be the 2 seed. They're going to be the Warriors' greatest threat. And then after the preseason, no. Like we always knew the Rockets were the second best team. We always knew that. Like and pretending like those predictions never existed. I love it. I love every year.
Hey, maybe the Rockets take a big step back this season, but that's a pretty big step back. I think people are saying how big a step back it would take for the Rockets to fall into the pack and for anyone to come out of the pack and pass them. Like, that's a huge difference. They were way better than everyone else last season in the West, except for the Warriors. And not just, like, a bit better, a lot better. The Rockets were, like, a strong contender, like, a particularly strong contender, and everyone else in the West was a pretty good playoff team in terms of all, like, all the metrics and ratings and whatever you can say for them. And you can say, well, none of that really counts. Like, okay, if you want to say the entire regular season means absolutely nothing, then, like, why do we not just have every team go in the playoffs then if the regular season indicates nothing? Obviously, the Kings are not as good as the Warriors, right? So there's some way you can tell a difference. And by any measure, if you allow that there's any way you can tell the difference between a good basketball team and a bad basketball team, the Rockets were better than everyone except the Warriors in the West by a pretty decent margin. And so, yeah, maybe they did fall back that far, but that takes a lot. That's a bolder take than people think it is. I think it's just a boring take to say that the Rockets are going to be back right where they were again, that they're about as good as they were last season. Nobody wants to bring out that boring take. It's way more fun to say that things are going to shake up, even when, unfortunately, people, they're not really going to shake up. We live in the Warriors world. There are no shakeups. There's just gradually trudging towards a Warriors championship.
Yeah, it's way more fun to say Trevor Ariza was the second coming of Scottie Pippen and that the Rockets have lost a lot this offseason, right? Like, it's way more fun to sensationalize their losses than to say, you know, they're pretty much the same team. Like, that's probably what we're looking at right now. Like, they're about
as good.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I'll put it to you this way. The Rockets have two of the top 10 players in the league. What other team other than the Warriors can say that? Nobody.
Yeah, and then imagine that on the off chance they do pick up Jimmy Butler, that how ridiculous that would be. That's like three top 20 players.
Right.
That's a level of elite that you just never really see. So, yeah. But that's not a fun take to say. Yeah, they're probably going to be excellent again.
Yeah, I mean it's everyone's looking for the new thing, and every year that new thing seems to be the Oklahoma City Thunder, even though. The Rockets continually win more games with them, continually get farther in the playoffs than them, and, you know, continually dominate them. But, you know, the Thunder are going to be the conference finals this year. That's what the internet's saying this year. Actually, you know what? The hot take this year is the Jazz. Like, that's everyone's favorite pick to challenge the Warriors this year, not named the Rockets. It seems like the Rockets... not the Rockets. It seems like the Jazz and... the Celtics are everyone's favorite team this year in terms of legitimately challenging the Warriors. Like those two teams seem to be everyone's favorite.
Though Celtics have a ton of talent, but it does feel to me like another example of everybody is like penciling in the young hotness to come of age sooner than they actually will. This happens all the time. Every year, everyone's like, oh, this new young team is totally going to make the leap. And sometimes they do, but usually never as much as people think they will. It takes longer for teams to get to that level than they think. Internal growth of players is usually not as robust as people think it's going to be. It's pretty wild to me that everyone's just already assumed, like, oh, the Celtics are going to be, like, right at the Warriors level, probably. That's, like, a common opinion, is that the Celtics are going to be, like, almost a Warriors-level team.
People are predicting them to win 65 games. That is nuts! Winning 60 games is a really, really hard feat. Like, yeah, I have never predicted the Rockets to win 60 games, ever. I've never done that. And the Rockets are probably a better team than the Celtics. I've never predicted them to win 60 games. To actually have that prediction for a non-Warriors team is insane. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's an incredibly bold take. Like I said, it could happen. They could be, like, the second best team in the league. They have a ton of talent, but... it's wild to me to be like, oh, these guys are the best players in the league. Like, suddenly Gordon Hayward is like a superstar level player when he was in Utah. That's not what anybody thought. I mean, yes, obviously he got better over the past couple of years, except for that season he lost. But yeah, just because they could be that good doesn't mean they will be that good. That's still a pretty risky gamble to take as how excellent they're going to be. Same thing with the Jazz. You know, people would like the Jazz to make that leap, and maybe they'll make some leap. And Donovan Mitchell is extremely talented, and I can see him being a superstar in the pretty near future. But Rudy Gobert is not like he's not like a top 10 player.
He has top 10 impact, though. I think that's a legitimate claim. Like defensively, he has some of the best impact numbers in the entire NBA.
Yeah, but he can't be out there getting outplayed by Clint Capella. I'm sorry, like that's
sure.
He's not on the same level of talent that like some of these other superstars are, right? He's an excellent player, but that does not like an elite team in the Warriors era make. These teams are all excellent and they can have a lot of internal development. The Thunder, another team that, you know, I guess Dennis Schroeder is ready to make the leap. But the Thunder also were a team that everybody would like to be good every season because they're a lot of fun and a perennial, like enjoyable underdog who could plausibly make the leap. But a lot of this, I think, is that people want a new, cool, exciting thing to happen. They want the fun team to be the good team. Yeah, they want the fun team to be the good team, and the fun team is not usually the good team. Yeah. So we'll see.
Can we call the Thunder an underdog if they're continually overrated going into training camp every year? Like, is that really a thing? Like, if the Thunder continue to be considered one of the best teams in the league, even though they have not shown anything to indicate that, other than maybe their net rating last year, like if they continue to be that, how can they really realistically be considered an underdog? I don't understand that.
Because there's two teams better than them in their conference every year.
Right. Like, it's, I guess.
Everyone's an underdog compared to the Warriors.
Sure.
Right. Except the Rockets, I guess. But
I mean,
John Cena's always an underdog, so I don't know what to tell you.
I get it. Like, the Rockets aren't the fun team to pick as the second best team in the league. I get it. Like, it's nobody wants the Rockets to be that, like, legitimately the best challenger to the Warriors, but it is what it is. So what are you most looking forward to this regular season?
Oh boy. Hoping that the young guys work out a little bit. I'd like to see some of their flyers they took play out. I want to see Hartenstein show some real promise. I think that would be huge for the team. They need a pipeline of young talent. I don't think it's going to come in the form of, you know, of MCW, but they need some younger dudes to show some promise and to, you know, create for them an ongoing source of new blood that will keep the team going long term, because the guys they already have, they can retain them, but they're getting older. So they need new role players and potentially new stars for the future. So that's what I want to see. I want to see the development of the young players, and I don't know, wins are nice.
Yeah, it'd be great if Isaiah Hartenstein breaks out and becomes a legitimate backup center for the Rockets. Like, it'd be great if someone actually takes away some of those Nene minutes that, you know, Nene's been solid for the Rockets for 2 years now, but he's getting up there in age, and the Rockets have to find a replacement before he gets over the hill.
He gets traded to Minnesota in exchange for Jimmy Butler, yes.
Right, yeah. Like, Nene is getting really dangerously close to washed, and you gotta find that replacement before it happens, right? So, like, it'd be great if Zochi or Hartenstein or Marquise Chris or one of these guys works out for the Rockets at the back of five, so they don't have to go into a Warriors series with Clint Capella having to play 48 minutes, right? It'd be great if they could get someone to spell him. Even though they're probably not going to play much traditional five in a Warriors series, they're probably going to play a lot of PJ Tucker at center. But you know what I mean. It'd be great if they can get somebody at that backup five. I am most looking forward to, and I hate being the nerdy dude here, but I am most looking forward to the buyout market. Like, I am really, really interested. Like, and I've been on this all summer long, so it's only natural that I continue this. They are going to get somebody. That's going to happen. They're not going to let that $4.5 million taxpayer below exception go away. Like, it's not going to fade into the darkness. They're going to get somebody. They're going to be a strong contender on this market. They're going to have a huge chunk of change to spend, and I want to see who shakes loose. I want to see who becomes available, is that going to be like Damari Carroll? Is that going to be someone of note that the Rockets could pick up for cheap and legitimately put into the playoff rotation right away? Like, it's normally I'm excited to something about something tangentially that you can see on the basketball court, but this season I'm excited to see what they do midseason for the first time in a while, because they might actually be really, really active, more so than last year, because last year they just picked up Gerald Green and they didn't make any trades. And I think this year, you know, they've been very judicious at not trading their first round picks. So I think the midseason is going to be really fun for the Rockets. Like, it's going to be a constant refreshing of Twitter once that, you know, February period comes around.
Man, that is, you are looking at stuff that is like in February. You are really looking past half the season.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest. I think the Rockets are going to be a little bit boring this year in terms of, like, they're just going to be so good. Like last year, it was surprising how good they were, so it was entertaining. This year, I think it's going to be kind of boring how good they are, right? It's going to be, like, it's not going to be fun watching them blow teams out by 20. Like it was last year, because it was something we hadn't seen before. We hadn't seen that level of dominance, but this year, I mean, there's going to be some stuff at the beginning of the season that's going to be interesting, like watching Melo, watching, you know, some of the young guys break out, James Ennis, all that stuff. It's going to be fun, but watching to see how they improve their team is going to be more interesting to me personally, you know? And I understand, like, normally I pick something on the basketball court to be looking forward to this season, but I just want to see. I'm excited for the buyout market. That's something I haven't been able to say in a while, because the Rockets haven't had any sort of chunk change left over. Like, last year they were supposed to have an exception available, but they spent that on Tariq Black. And Tariq Black ended up being useless for the Rockets in the playoffs. Like, an utter waste of that biannual exception. And so having an actual exception to spend on someone that might actually be useful in the playoffs is a prudent move and really exciting for me in terms of the possibilities.
And you've really been you really got hit by how good the Rockets are really quickly. I mean, I am still here for 20-point wins. That's good enough for me. I have simple pleasures, I guess.
No, I mean, like, I'll look forward to the Warriors matchups. You know, those are going to be good. But I mean, in general, like, and this is why, like, the Warriors to me have been kind of boring. Like, blowouts aren't fun for me. Like, they just aren't. Like, they just aren't fun for me. If it's your team, sure, it's a little bit fun in terms of knowing that they're that dominant. But it's a little bit disinteresting in terms of writing about the team and podcasting about the team. Like, I mean, you remember last year we were looking for things to podcast about when there was nothing there. We were just like, We got on this microphone every week, and we're like, oh, the Rockets are really good. What do we talk about? Like, it's like that's what it got to last season. And I'm looking forward to this. Like, I this is something I'm actually really excited about. I know you probably disagree with me. You're probably looking forward to stuff on the basketball court this season. But yeah, that's just me.
Well, all right, fair enough.
What is Houston ceiling this year, and what is their floor? And this is regular season and postseason.
Yeah, the ceiling is first seed in the entire NBA and a championship, which I know that sounds crazy. I mean, what? They were only like a game away from making it to the finals last season. How could they ever win one more game than last season? Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that their ceiling is the highest ceiling possible. And their floor is, I don't know, probably like low 50s, 52 or something like that, if everyone just doesn't fit together well and Melo just drains the team's will to live and stuff like that.
Will to live. That's a little bit strong. Man, you are not a fan of the signing. But I'll say, yeah, I agree. Their ceiling is first seed in a championship. 100%, that is their ceiling. We saw how close they got last year. It's going to be interesting to see what changes this season, if anything. Are the Warriors still that same juggernaut that they were in the playoffs? Is Draymond still the same level of player he was last year? That's going to be interesting to see how motivated and how dominant the Warriors truly are. But, yeah, they're the Rockets are a legitimate threat to win their title this year. It's not a secret. They've said it multiple times. Now, to other people, they may not be. Like, you know, like as we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, a lot of people expect them to take a step back. But I genuinely believe that they're still a title contender. And I still think that they're going to be a powerhouse in the Western Conference this season. And I think their floor is about, yeah, what you said, 50 games. Like, I think Chris Paul and James Harden have proven themselves out to be good enough to have a floor for their teams of 50 wins. Like, that's just how good they are.
Yeah, unless like James Harden loses a leg tomorrow, right? Like, unless one, but honestly, even if one of them was out for the season, they have enough talent. They should probably win 50 games. So like, maybe if Harden and Chris Paul both like went down with season long injury somehow, like they got in a car wreck together or something. But you can't, you know, that
knock on wood. Knock on wood.
It would have to be a real bolt of lightning, like that you would be unpredictable and unlikely in the extreme, and you obviously you can't count on that. That's like saying like, oh well, the Warriors could win 30 games if the entire team all like decides to retire, you know. Like,
right,
while these things are sort of technically possible, they're not worth considering and they're not informative to think about either.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and this kind of ties into my next question: what's one thing that could potentially raise Houston's ceiling and what's one thing that could potentially lower it? I'm gonna say the answer to this question is the same thing: health. Health could raise their ceiling substantially, and health could decrease their ceiling substantially. Like, if Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, if all those guys are healthy, their ceiling, like all year, their ceiling is the title. It's the title, and it's the first seed. And that's obviously couching it. They have to be healthy, but If they aren't healthy, and if, as you said, something horrific happens, or if they just get some bad luck along the way and bad timing, and like last year they had a lot of bad injury luck, and if that happens again, that could lower their floor substantially. Like they outperformed their win differential by like three games, so that might not happen this season. Like they might just lose those games if they're not healthy. They may just be a bad clutch team, you know.
Yeah, that could be. I'm not super worried about that, though. I mean, they're going to be good. Health could be a big problem. It could lower their ceiling. Once again, like, if James Harden misses a lot more time than he did, that's probably the biggest blow that could happen, and it can happen. I think, honestly, for me, chemistry is a bigger worry than, and you know, lack of a continuity than injury, because injury just, you can't really control for it. It's, everybody has that problem. It feels to me like an easy way out to say that, like, oh, well, maybe someone gets hurt. Anybody could get hurt. But I don't – yeah, I'm more worried about, like, chemistry, because that means there are more scenarios where they're dragged down by chemistry, I think, than by injury, if that makes any sense.
No, that, like, makes sense.
So I think it's a larger expected loss value on that one. What could raise their chances? Well, two things, I guess. I'm going to cheat and bring up two things. I have to mention one of them, unfortunately, which is that a Jimmy Butler trade happens.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that, yeah.
But the other thing is, if the Warriors just continue their backslide, then their chances go up. And this is a thing that nobody's talking about, because it feels almost like heresy, or like jinxing it to bring it up, which is that the Warriors clearly are like slowly running down, because they're getting bored, old, tired, etc. There are tons of things that are happening with them, and they seem to care less and less, and they do a little bit worse every season despite having so much talent. I mean, they literally like did everything they could to lose to the Rockets and somehow like kind of got bailed out. And nobody wants to say that the Warriors got bailed out, but they did. They dug themselves into a hole, and they managed to escape punishment for it. And they seem to have shown no inclination to avoid going into that hole in the future. So if the Warriors just mess around, just don't care, and are unable to bring themselves to sufficiently care and get like bounced by somebody, whether it's by Houston or someone else in a previous round, that's a little on the table. It feels weird to say this. It feels like that's not going to happen. Come on, what are you thinking about? But teams don't go to the finals this many years in a row without a lot of like mental and physical fatigue. They're running down slowly, and there is going to come a time where they're unable or unwilling to do what it takes to avoid getting beat in the playoffs. The Warriors are not going to win every championship for the rest of eternity. They're going to lose sooner or later. And it may be sooner than people are expecting. It's because there's more to it just than these four guys are extremely talented.
Yeah, I mean, they really did come into that series with the Rockets a little bit laissez-faire, right? Like they
did.
Yeah, and it did end up costing them. They underestimated the Rockets. They did. They 100% thought the Rockets were nothing. There was that talk about how Steve Kerr said, if we had Andre Iguodala, we would have beat the Rockets in five games. Which was, by the way, we haven't dissected the ridiculousness of that statement enough. Like, Steve Kerr has the audacity to say that Andre Iguodala is more valuable than Chris Paul and Luke Mbamute combined, basically. Because the Rockets were out without those two players for the last two games. So, we haven't dissected that statement enough. He just got a hall pass for that statement.
It's wild because even if it's true, which I'm not going to go ahead and grant that one.
Yeah.
I think there's some merit to thinking about it. But even if it's true, that means that your team is like the best team of all time. But if they're missing one old bench guy, then suddenly they're just like pretty good. That seems a bit of a worry, right? If they need this one particular player to be anywhere near their top potential, and he's not even like one of their best players, and he's also getting a lot older and slower. So if that's true, they should be very worried. This is a good one.
Okay, what is your boldest prediction for the season? And we'll end on this.
Okay. My boldest prediction for, does that have to be Houston related or just in general?
Whatever you want to do with it.
Okay. All right. My boldest prediction for this season is I think the Lakers are going to be on the playoff bubble.
Is that bold?
I think it is because everyone assumes that they're automatically going to get in because LeBron's there, but I think they're going to end up at 8 or 9.
Oh, okay, 8 or 9. I thought you were talking 6, 7, 8. Yeah, that is bold. That is bold. I think they're going to be a low-rung playoff team. I'm not sure if they're going to be battling for playoff positioning, but I think they will be a playoff team. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of questions with that roster. There are a lot. I mean, the players they signed, I still can't believe they signed the players they signed. and their offseason was just a roller coaster. I mean,
dude, their defense is bad.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, they signed Michael Beasley. They signed Lance Stevenson. They signed Rajon Rondo. I mean, what the hell, man? You just signed LeBron James, and this is how you capitalize on this? Like, I would be royally pissed if I was a Lakers fan. I don't care if they're one-year deals. I would be pissed. You're wasting a year of LeBron's prime for this. Like, I did not agree with the calculus of their front office this summer. I don't care if they're one-year deals. I understand that they're making a calculated decision to try and go after a star player next summer and that they're going to have a lot of money next summer to spend on players. But, I mean, come on. Like, you could have signed, like you could have signed Luka Mbamute for the same money that you gave to Rajon Rondo. Like, Luka Mbamute signed for a $4.3 million contract with the Clippers. Yeah, he signed for a $4.3 million contract with the Clippers. So he was going to L.A. He clearly wanted to be back in L.A. You couldn't have signed him. You could have spent your money a little bit better this summer. Like, I'm sorry. It's just frustrating as hell. And they didn't bring Julius Randle back. I'm dumbfounded about what they did this summer.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
And they hired Kurt Rambis. What the hell, man? Like
it's so good. I'm so glad the Lakers exist now. I just legitimately love them now because they are...
Oh, they're so great for basketball.
They're such a delightful like head scratcher at every turn.
Yeah. It's...
All right, what do you got? What's your big, bold prediction?
Okay, I kept it Rockets related, and I'm going to say that the Rockets are still going to be a top 8 defense. And
ooh, I like it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty much the same kind of defense they were last year. Perhaps a little bit of movement, but I think largely, I think they're still going to be the same defensive threat that they were last year. And a lot of that is I think they're going to add someone. And I realize I'm putting a lot of eggs in this basket, but I do think they're going to add someone. And I think the players that they picked up aren't too much of a drop off from who they lost. Like I did not put a lot of stock in the Trevor Ariza's defense. Like I just didn't. Like I know a lot of people did, but a lot of people weren't watching the Rockets as closely as I was. I'm sorry. I know that hurts your ego a little bit, but I mean, I'm sorry. You weren't watching the Rockets as closely if you think Trevor Ariza was this all NBA level defender that they lost. Like he just wasn't. He was declining substantially. He had gotten to the point where he was an okay defender and reliable enough to play a lot of minutes. But other than that, I don't think James Ennis is that big of a downgrade from Trevor Ariza. And Luka Bamute, I think, was a big loss. I thought was a bigger loss to the Rockets. I think they'll be able to replace that on the buyout market. And that's what's largely going into this prediction. I think they're going to be a pretty good defense team again.
Hey, that's a good take. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's it for the season preview. Just the Rockets. We went 1 hour and 7 minutes long. Surprising. But that's good stuff for you guys. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good review on iTunes if you're new to the show. It really helps people find us. And yeah, guys, good night.